need no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hegstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Education Nation. Today, we are going to be talking about an issue that's playing right here in Minnesota and then also on the national stage as well. And that is, how do we handle transgender identification when it comes to our own basic rights? I'm joined here by Pete Hegseth, my co-host, who has been just a wonderful sidekick and actually leader of the show. I just thank you for that.
Sidekick only. No, I'm grateful to be here on this Saturday morning. We said when we started, we kicked off Education Nation, that we would start with basics and then move to relevant, difficult topics. Mm-hmm, and to your credit, as we've prepped for these shows, and you've really been the driver of kind of where we go and when we go there, you said, hey, we got to take this one head on. We've got to talk about it, because the transgender situation, rights movement, it's happening not only across the country in high profile ways, but right here in Minnesota. And I think that's the value of this show, is to bring it back to our local communities, remind the audience that these things that we see on cable television or in the news, they're happening right here too.
Right.
And very real impacts on our families and our schools and our communities. Right. Education Nation was set out to tackle these types of topics. And as you always do, Rebecca, because you are the headmaster of this show.
of the show.
you find a way, of a lot of things. Also, a wonderful school called Liberty Classical Academy, which I plug shamelessly whenever I can. You find people who can bring a great voice to the topic. Mm-hmm. So this morning, I'll allow you to introduce the great guest
we
have this morning.
Thank you so much. So we are joined here in the studio with a parent named Jamie. I almost called you Janae. That's funny. We had a Janae on the show a few weeks ago. But we are joined by a parent named Jamie, and she has had some personal experience at a charter school in the Twin Cities with one of her or a couple of her children. And so we know it is coming to the fact that this really is affecting schools. The Minnesota State High School League also addressed this over a year ago now. And actually, we're going to be talking about that in a few weeks, actually maybe very next week. So this is a very relevant topic when it comes to schools. And while it may be difficult for some people to talk about, it's an important topic to discuss. And one of the things that we value at Liberty and here on Education Nation is respectful dialogue.
Yep.
And so we believe it's important to demonstrate that respectful dialogue anytime that we can. So, Jamie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate you coming in. And maybe we could start out by having you tell us a little bit about how you were introduced to this topic at the charter school that your two children attended.
Sure. I have three children there. Mm-hmm. So the fall of this year, well, first of all, I'll talk a little bit about the charter school. Mm-hmm. The charter school is a parent-led charter school, and one of the best in the state, and one that we were really proud and fortunate to be a part of. Mm-hmm. It has a really diverse background of people, liberal, conservative, everywhere in between. And we were first really introduced to this fall when we got an email coming home to us from some new administration that said that they would like to discuss with our K-5 students gender identity. And they would like to do that using a book called My Princess Boy. So that's how it first came to us.
Wow. That was pretty shocking to you, I'm sure, to receive that kind of out of the blue. No forewarning, just suddenly we want to talk about this with our K-5 students.
Correct, yeah. And it came right before MEA, and it was going to take place right after MEA. So it was shocking to me, and it ended up being shocking to a lot of other parents as well. And kind of organically, all these parents started talking about it, saying, you know, this seems maybe like something that we need to have a little bit more discussion about prior to just reading this to our children. It's a controversial topic. Not everybody agrees on certain views of gender identity. Mm-hmm. So, it was very shocking.
What was the stated rationalization or justification for immediately introducing this topic to, and I'm always, you know, kindergartners through fifth grade, I have a kindergartner, you know, just processing basic things, let alone something like that. What? How was it explained? I mean, was it a long email? Here's our thought process. Was there a follow-up conversation? What was the justification or the need for now on this topic?
So the purpose that was stated was that it was to help gender nonconforming children, and that this particular year that there was a gender nonconforming child at school, and it was to be coinciding with the anti-bullying theme. So it, and we had gotten different, I guess, different statements about whether it was preempting bullying or if it was actually because of bullying. So
it wasn't, so you couldn't, you asked, hey, is someone being bullied and we're responding to it, or are we preempted? Did they answer that?
Correct. We asked many times, because then they claimed that a child was being bullied for this, but we never really got down to what that bullying was.
So, and when you say gender nonconforming, what you're saying in plain speak is either a girl who identifies like a boy or enjoys boy-type activities, or a boy identifying as a girl and enjoys girl-type activities, correct?
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Which is something that anyone who's been in elementary school or junior high, of course, has confronted their entire life, right?
Right, correct.
I mean, it just is what it is.
Right, right. This is a natural thing that we see, you know, having a background in speech path with a lot of cognitive and child development. It is actually a pretty normal part of child development to have some of these identity issues that wouldn't necessarily mean that the child is supposed to be the opposite gender. It's just a natural part of their development of kind of questioning and learning. It's kind of the process of learning, well, who am I as a girl or who am I as a boy? But that's based on the biological. Was there ever any room left for families who don't believe that that gender identity is a social construct, that they actually believe that it is based upon the biological gender at birth?
Well, that was brought up a lot. We ended up having some board meetings and what we called climate committee meetings to discuss this. And that, based on biology, mm-hmm. was definitely brought up in a very reasonable tone and a very kind manner, and it was shot down by a very high emotion on the other side that mm-hmm. was
a parents or administration or both? Or?
Both, and then also a lot of outside groups came into
okay,
our board
meetings. Oh boy, okay. So you had a big voice that was kind of proponents of the whole idea that gender identity is more of a social construct.
Correct. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of outside groups come into the school to tell us what truly gender identity meant and how we were supposed to think about it.
Okay. Oh, so you got educated.
Okay,
I got educated.
Yes.
Well, did you feel like, was this an incident where then advocacy groups got involved, or did this feel like advocacy from the beginning? You know, because give me a sense. I mean, you're watching this unfold. Outside groups come in. A lot of emotion. Emotion is always used in these instances. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you feel bum rushed? Did it feel organic? I mean, what and how long did that process take?
So I think we did feel a little sucker punched. Initially, when we were just trying to get our hands around it, we were thinking, is this just about a family, about a student, or what is this? And it was pretty immediate that the outside groups came in with their idea of what needed to happen next. After the book, it moved to bathrooms, it moved to locker rooms, and that was all pretty quick. So did that answer your question?
Yeah. So it moved after the book, it moved to bathrooms. What do you mean? Tell me the other places where this argument eventually went.
Okay. So at the board meetings, so initially there was a little bit of dialogue between the administration and the parents that had concerns that this maybe shouldn't be taught at elementary, that we can definitely teach how to be kind without saying that we have to accept everything from everybody.
Right, right.
That was really something that we were trying to push. Mm-hmm. It would just be like if I came in and said, you know, I really think, you know, I'm Catholic. The tenets of my religion are really important. I need everybody here to learn that right. in order to, you know, not bully me.
Right.
That's kind of how it felt.
Yes. True tolerance is what you're asking for then.
True tolerance
is when you really do tolerate the other viewpoints. What you were experiencing, it sounds to me, is though you were being told that you are only tolerant if you accept this certain viewpoint, of gender.
We were actually told that it would be discriminatory not to accept that. So we went in and specifically asked, you know, is this going to lead to mixed bathrooms and mixed locker rooms? And in all of this, you know, there were parents that were gathering together that were asking questions, people that believed different things and really trying to be solution oriented here. Mm-hmm. Like, if this is really just an organic problem that we need to fix, boy, we've got a staff bathroom that would seem to accommodate
right.
that.
Right.
So when we went in and asked, and we even asked, you know, gosh, we would be willing to fundraise for a unisex bathroom that would make this, you know, any gender non-conforming.
Which is a super generous, pragmatic solution.
Right, it was. Right. We were really, really trying. And we were really trying because this was a school that we loved and it was a culture that we had loved. So we were trying to do that. And we were specifically told from our school's attorney that, no, that is discriminatory. And when we asked for case law.
Right, right.
And
I was going to ask what they showed you. Did they share anything with you?
Well, then we were told, you know, it was the Safe and Supportive Schools Act, it was Title IX, and it was the Human Rights Act.
And Title IX is not about gender being a social construct. Title IX is about definitely protecting the two different genders. I mean, Title IX was passed back in, what, the 70s?
Yeah,
it
was. I mean, Title IX is commonly understood to make sure that girls and women have access to the same sports
opportunities.
And opportunities. I mean, that's certainly been something that's been well-known and well-litigated.
Right.
And this, I don't want to go to the national quite yet, but these are the exact same arguments being used surrounding North Carolina and the bathroom bill or the so-called bathroom bill, is that it's discriminatory. Wait, I just have to rewind in a common sense level. How is someone discriminatory if they're offering an exception or a new opportunity of a unisex bathroom? How is that not accommodating as opposed to discriminatory?
Mm-hmm. Well, what we were told was that would be discriminatory because the person could not use the bathroom they felt aligned with their gender.
And no mention, of course, of the other students who would then also have their protections and rights being maybe trampled on because there is a person who is perceived to be of the opposite of gender in their bathroom.
Right.
As young kids.
Right. Well, then it was, you know, crazy suggestions like maybe we need to have bathroom times or all of the kids that felt uncomfortable with that would then go to the, you know, the unisex bathroom.
Oh my goodness. So we're going to put a couple of kids in the main bathroom and put the bulk of the kids in the unisex bathroom.
Correct. That
but
was
that
one.
Would be okay for their rights, even though it's not for the other.
That's what we were told.
I'm going to make a quick, like, slightly political comment as an aside. Isn't it always the conservatives who are criticized for being in our bathroom or in our bedroom? In this case, no, listen, I mean, the progressives are the one telling you which bathroom, when and where you can use it and who's allowed to do it based on a difficult situation, clearly, for a young child, but one that's been accommodated for decades and centuries with some common sense solutions. So, okay, let's move the narrative forward. What do you do next? So now they're continuing to persist.
Correct. And also one of the things that happened is they had a big parent education night, and they also had the staff educated by, I would say, an activist on the other side, because he only presented that side of things. So the parents that were really concerned with one message being presented, one way being presented, got together and held a big event. And it was deemed, you know, we were deemed a hate group the night before the event. It was really
so just... So the parents that banded together were deemed a hate group.
We were deemed a hate group. Mm-hmm. And then we really just wanted to have a different version, not even a version. We just wanted to have some facts laid out. What does Title IX say? What does the Safe and Supportive Schools Act say?
Right.
So when we did that, we had to do that on our own dime. We rented out the gym space. We had 200 activists there in protest, and we also had about 150 parents there.
Wow!
Listening.
Wow! And it takes a lot of courage, by the way.
I just
want to commend you because that is the typical tactic of the left to scream your and demean the opponent.
Bullying, really?
Ironically, bullying. But I mean, the most powerful activists, as we talked to some other people, are accidental activists who you didn't seek this limelight. You were affected by it directly and stood up.
Mm-hmm. I want to say right now that I would have never in a million years thought that I would be talking about transgender issues or having to actually protect my children from things like this. My very young children So I think that's why the reaction was so strong, that it was no longer enough to tell our kids to be kind to people despite differences. We now had to embrace every tenet of that difference.
Right, right. Which then really begs the question, what about your own free speech? What about your own religious freedom? It seems that you're having to embrace only this one viewpoint, or you are deemed a bully, or you're deemed narrow-minded, or, you know, any number of terms.
And I think that's where it got really sticky. There was a lot of concern from people opposing this policy about free speech, and rightfully so, because what now constitutes bullying?
Right.
Is telling the truth at this point now constituting bullying?
Right.
And we were pretty much told, yes, it is.
Wow.
So that, and I think that, and also feeling like I was being, you know, complicit in all that was going on at the school really made us feel like we needed to give a voice to just the other side here. Otherwise, it seemed like this was just fine for everybody, when it really wasn't. And it was about at least 100 parents that were very, very concerned.
Yeah, yeah. And understandably so. When you're talking about young children and that the kind of confusion that that can cause and create, it's a serious issue.
It really is a serious issue. Yeah. And I think it's pretty ridiculous to think you're going to go in and tell kids, you know, you can be a boy one day, you can be a girl another day, and leave the classroom and say, hey, everything was great. It went just fine.
Right, right. You know, and by the way, don't call that child the opposite one on the day that they are feeling that way.
Right. That's another thing, because we couldn't get a clear answer to, you know, we couldn't get a clear answer to that either, far as what gender would be.
I'll tell you, Jamie, this is amazing. I'm sure parents who are listening to this are just in shock over what they're hearing. We are going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit further with Jamie about her experience at this charter school in the Twin Cities. Thank you.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
We are back to Education Nation. It is 10:46 a.m. on your Club 1220 KLBB dial. We are grateful you're spending your Saturday morning with us. And I want to make another mention. If you're interested in today's program, you can find all the other ones as podcasts on the KLBB website or at libertyclassicalacademy.org. They're cataloged, lots of different topics. Rebecca, we've been doing this for a number of weeks now.
We have
covered a lot of ground. Obviously, a very fascinating and hot topic here this morning that we're going to continue with.
Yes, yes. And we are so thankful to have you in the studio with us today, Jamie. And we've been talking with Jamie, a parent who experienced this issue of transgender and how to handle that in a school personally, up firsthand with her children. And so, well, I'd like to talk with you a little bit more, Jamie, about maybe how you wish the school had dealt with this situation when it arose. I think earlier this fall it was, right?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the first thing, we would have appreciated some honesty. As parents, we were told different things going into meetings constantly. Like the bathrooms weren't on the table when they clearly were. We just would have really appreciated some honesty. And especially when we were at these board meetings and we were bringing up concerns about free speech and First Amendment rights. At one point, the attorney said, you know, I think we need to shut this dialogue down before it becomes a hostile environment.
Oh, my goodness. So now we're not even going to allow discussion, respectful discussion.
That was
my goodness.
Oh, I can't overstate enough the concern that no dialogue was really expected or wanted, and if dialogue came up that people didn't agree with, the answer was you're hateful and you're bigoted.
Wow! In the meeting,
there were people that stood up that said that yes.
Oh
yep,
my goodness!
We were
okay. So absolutely no room for differentiation of thought.
It's so maddening and amazing to me. Yeah. And I just sit over here listening and watching. And first of all, appreciating your courage to talk about this and lead the charge on it when it's something you never chose to do. But to think we're at a place in our country today where conventions that have been held for hundreds and thousands of years are being challenged with a couple of meetings and an email. And you're now the hateful bigot who's been discriminating against one or two children in this particular context and are shouted down and told to, and it's such, so we talk about higher education here on this program, safe spaces and trigger warnings and all of that. If these folks impose that same viewpoint on a school board meeting or others and they say, hey, don't talk back. Right. Because if you're challenging our orthodoxy, you must be hateful.
Right.
And how did that, you didn't expect that. You probably expected your school to have a dialogue. Did you, I don't know, you've heard other people talk about it. Did you feel like, could this really be happening to me?
We felt like we were in the twilight zone is how we felt.
Yeah.
We felt we were coming to the table with some real true concerns, and we really did want to be solution oriented. Nobody wanted this child bullied or any child bullied for any reason, and that was really clear from the very beginning. And it also became very clear that that's not what this was about. So, yeah, it felt like we were in the twilight zone.
To go to your own school board meetings and be told this has become a hostile environment because you're pushing back, you and dozens, if not hundreds, of other parents banding together. There aren't a lot of people that would stand up and do that. So I commend you. But I know you've got kids in that school. You're personally invested in the school. And you you know, you believe in that, in the mission of that school.
Right.
Trying
to stand up for your own children is what, and not just you, but these hundreds of parents, trying to stand up for the rights of their own children and then being told that they are being the bullies.
And really just truthfully trying to have a dialogue about it at the start, trying to come up with some solutions. At one point, there was a parent that wrote a book that was trying to satisfy everybody, and it was all the protected classes. And it said, you know, we don't laugh at a little boy that's wearing a dress. And I mean, because there was nothing out there like that. So she wrote a book, and that was not enough because it was not affirming.
It's such a great point. It's the affirmation, it's the acceptance. It's not just the tolerance. You will accept, you will affirm, you will praise this perspective as opposed to just tolerating.
Tolerating is not enough any longer. Interesting. What would you suggest, Jamie, for parents out there today? Because this issue is growing. We're starting to see this grow nationwide, not just in schools. We are seeing this play out at Target Corporation, you know, across the country, North Carolina. What would be your suggestion to parents if they came into a situation where this was being pushed upon their school?
I think the first thing is not to be afraid, because it is, you do feel fearful because you don't want to be labeled a bigot or hateful, and you're you're not a bigot or hateful for having some concerns. So I think the first thing is just don't be afraid. You do have rights. You have rights under our Constitution. Thank goodness. And the second thing, I think you need to find your people, because there are a ton of people, as we just organically talked to friends that were really uncomfortable with what was going on. And we set up a group so that we could communicate with each other, which was really helpful as, you know, thing after thing poured out regarding this issue. And then find your people more broadly as far as who can help. You know, we reached out to the Minnesota Family Council. They were fantastic. We reached out to ADF, which was fantastic. And then there's also some attorneys in town that were willing just to share what our rights are. And I think your kids need to go to school armed with their rights.
Sadly, your lower school kids.
Your lower school kids. Your little, yes, they do. They have to know that they can say things and not... and that they have a right to say those things. So that's one thing. And then I think you need to be involved, which was huge for us. You have to go to your board meetings. You have to go to your administration. You have to run for your board, because if you're not, somebody else is, and they have very different ideas of what public education should look like. You know, I was told that public education should be neutral in competing conceptions of the good, and our school was anything but neutral in this very controversial topic.
Absolutely. So well said, by the way, as someone who's truly thought about this and engaged on this.
You mentioned
preparing your lower school kids, and you chimed in for their rights. It's amazing to think about the fact that that's what they're having to be prepared to do and confronted with at that level, to to know, I mean, again, I go back to my kindergartner. Folks listening outside here would think of your first, second, third grade son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter. Are they prepared to litigate that? Should they be asked to do that? And the bullying part of it is what's very concerning, is that they could then now, under the new bullying environment, be charged with being a bully for simply pointing out something that, hey, we need to teach them to be kind, good citizens, nice to everybody, respectful. These are things as parents we're responsible to do. But if they slip up once, now they're a bully?
Well, you know, to be fair, they did say if you slipped up multiple times, you would be a bully. But that being said, you know, that's also teaching your child something, that it's okay to lie. I mean, that's really what ended up happening was, you know, if you know this child is a boy, they came to school a boy, and now they're identifying as a girl, and you are now a bully if you are saying he instead of she, and you are 5 years old.
And furthermore, with the Minnesota bullying, anti-bullying legislation that passed, I think it was in 2012 or 13, my understanding is that a child can then be referred for quote unquote retraining without their parents' knowledge, which I find extremely appalling. And there were a lot of people up in arms about this legislation back when it was being pushed through so quickly, of course, at the end. And it passed. And now it's really starting to play out as we start dealing with some of these transgender issues.
Well, there's a lot in these bills or these policies that go forward where you're not allowed to know things as parents. And we really saw that play out as far as when our school board had to come up with a policy, which they are doing right now. They're coming up with a policy. And, you know, it's a myth that you should know who's in the bathroom with your kids. I mean, there's all kinds of these things.
That's what you're being told.
And also that, you know, this goes so much further beyond. I want people to understand that this is now your overnight camps. This is your field trips. I didn't think about that. So it goes so much further beyond just, you know, oh, this is just a bathroom that they need to, you know, need to use. It's much, much more than that.
And it's such a cultural clash between competing views of the world where one sees families as the incubators of this and schools as reinforcing of values. And the other says, no, the school has them and takes them and molds them to be wards of the state or have the view that the state wants them to have. And they bum rush policies through that reflect whatever they decide the priorities are of that day.
Right.
Here. I mean, it's folks listening to this. This is not Washington, D.C. This is not just North Carolina. This is right here in our school districts, public and private. No one is immune from either the formal pressure or the public and perception pressure. And it does take good citizens and good parents to stand up and with a good heart, which I want to emphasize, having spent time with you following this issue. You've talked about this, Rebecca. You come at this from a perspective of love, of support, of solutions, which is a great example for people out there who have the same feelings and might eventually have to confront or deal with something like this.
And you do have to go to school the next day with other parents and other kids. And we definitely knew that when we were going there, this was a pluralistic society. So how do you operate in that with some basic common ground things? And we should be able to do that.
We sure should. I mean, that's what our nation was founded on.
Well, that's exactly right. And that is one of the biggest issues that's really facing the future of this country at this point is, are we really going to shed that whole history of almost 250 years of having a group of people that might have differing views, different religions, and be able to come together, work together to have a really functional and outstanding free republic? But now instead, we're seeing these dividing lines growing so strong that we really have to ask ourselves, well, how is this going to work moving forward if there's no acceptance of others?
And I just want to point out that if it had been left to the parents who have very diverse views, if we would have gotten together in a room and said, hey, how can we hammer this out? That would have been a completely different solution than what happened with having, you know, activist groups coming in and telling us this needs to be your policy. Nothing else is acceptable.
Such a good point. Well, Jamie, thanks for joining us. It's such a powerful reminder why the stuff we talk about on Saturday mornings has ramifications. Jamie, you're a courageous parent and a good patriot. Appreciate you being here this morning.
Thanks.